Hei, du hører nå på en podcast fra Litteraturhuset I Trondheim.
Because we have an international guest on the panel, I will switch to English back and forth. It will mostly be in Norwegian, but we will try to open up a bit in English. And we'll also open up for a discussion. And then you're welcome to speak English if you want, or Norwegian if you want. And maybe I'll take this in English, actually. Before I introduce the panel and give the word to you, I thought I'd do a quick show of hands, en liten håndsopprekning. Maybe I should ask, actually, both in Norwegian and in English. How many of you have felt like an economic or financial idiot because you work too much and make too little in response? Så hvor mange har følt seg som en økonomisk idiot fordi de jobber for mye og tjener tilsvarende for lite? Ja. Ganske mange, ja. Ja, nei, generelt. Noen gang noensinne I livet, ja. Hvor mange har noen gang vurdert å forlate frilanslivet? How many have ever considered leaving freelance life? And how many actually did get either a full-time job or a part-time job? Yeah. So that's the situation in this room, at least. So you can see, Mari, you're not alone. In the panel, we have Mari Mokrisinska, who's actually, or now I have to switch to Norwegian, sorry, som kvinnen bak det ganske spissa sitatet som vi har tatt utgangspunkt I kveld. Nemlig, jeg kan ikke være idiot heller, jeg må betale regningene mine. Men dette annonserte hun exit fra å arbeide som selvstendig aktør I scenekunsten og satte et ansikt på en opplevelse som da veldig mange av oss har kjent på. Og så har vi med oss Hans Ole Rian, som forbundsleder I CREO, Forbundet for kunst og kultur, som under pandemien har vært ekstra høyt oppe på barrikadene for kulturlivet. Og I Aftenposten så beskyldte han blant annet regjeringen, altså den daværende regjeringen, for å bøye seg for storkapitalen når det forsvant han, når kulturlivet ble helt stengt ned, men dispensasjoner ble gitt til andre næringer. Og så, and then... We also, to put the discussion in a more international or at least European perspective, we are so lucky to have Sandro Tajuri with us. He's now currently working at Trøndelag Theater as a composer for the production Parsifal,
right.
Which will premiere in April.
Yes, I believe. On the 2nd of April.
2nd of April,
yeah.
So very soon. So we're extra lucky to have you here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So before we start the discussion, I asked you all to come with a little bit of like situation description. Let's start with Mari. Mari has... I have to switch back to Norwegian again. Hun har vært det hun selv kaller en scenekunstpotet, som jeg også har kalt meg selv. Jeg tror det mange som føler det sånn. Og vært produsent med base I Trøndelag. Utdannet skuespiller, og har I tillegg en master I teatervitenskap fra NTNU. Hun har drevet kryssinska teaterproduksjon siden 2005, vært skuespiller, daglig leder I flere scenekunstkompanier I det frie feltet, og virket som produsent for flere frigrupper her I Trøndelag, blant annet en av dem som sitter her, på første rad, Ibrahim Faslik. Og har vært sceneinstruktør, leder for Propellen Teater, daglig leder for kunstverkstedet I Loksdalen, I tillegg til de andre tingene du har drevet med. Men nå har du også fått en 100% fast jobb på Havet, som et nytt utsted, slash saunahus, slash kulturarena I Trondheim. Så kan du beskrive situasjonen som du liksom, har befunnet deg I, og som du ikke alene om å være I? Som også har gjort at du liksom offentlig tok ut skilsmisse fra feltet?
Ja, for det ja. Jeg forstår jo at det kanskje ikke er sånn superinteressant at jeg tar ut skilsmisse fra feltet. Og det var ikke meningen at den... ja, jeg visste ikke at det skulle være den vinklinga. Men jeg valgte jo å gå med på å svare på forespørselen fra adressa, fordi at jeg vet at det er mange i samme situasjon, og mange som er på en sånn vippen nå, og har vært det det siste året, kanskje, som jeg snakker med, som sier sånn, jeg ser etter ting, det her går ikke, det går ikke. Så, og det vi, det konversasjonen går i, er ofte at den her, jeg vet dere helt sikkert alt sammen, selve administrasjonen, produsentrollen, og alt det medfører ganske mye, er nesten alltid en gratis jobb. Hvis den er dekt, så er den dekt symbolsk, og det fører til at de fleste scenekunstnere velger å gjøre den jobben selv. Det har vi jo mange eksempler på her i Trøndelag, at kompanier er alt. De kunstnerne som har kompanier løser hele produsentrollen, er sin egen regnskapsfører, et cetera, et cetera, markedsfører, helt selv, på fritida, i tillegg til å gjøre det de selvsagt er der for å gjøre, og produsere en forestilling, en produksjon. Hvis man får, ja, som produsent så har jeg jo gått inn i utrolig mange ulike produksjoner. Det er veldig ofte, altså det er jo masse forskjellige måter å løse det på, men det fører jo til at jeg bare tar utrolig mange parallelle jobber, og føler at man ikke gjør noen ting ordentlig. Som i dag har jeg vært på 4 forskjellige jobber. 4 forskjellige, helt separate jobber i dag. Og det er ikke ideelt for det jeg jobber med, det er ikke ideelt for meg, men det må jeg gjøre for å ha nok penger. Så det føler jeg er situasjonen for de fleste, at det står ikke på jobben. Mm. Det er ikke at det ikke produseres ting, og ikke det at det ikke blir solgt og sånn, men den her biten av jobben dekkes ikke i stor nok grad av de støtteordningene. Jeg jobber alltid med produksjoner som får god støtte, det er ikke det. Men denne biten blir ikke dekt. I hvert fall ikke i stor nok grad. Og det er et problem. Mm. I det frie feltet.
Mm. Ja, takk. Vi kan komme tilbake til disse tingene. Men jeg tenkte jeg skulle gå videre til Hans Ole Rian, som har vært forbundsleder i Creo siden 2013. Men selv har bakgrunnen fra kulturfeltet som blant annet kulturskolelærer i Leksvik. Kulturskolelærer er jo også en sånn type jobb som mange har ved siden av 10 andre ting, ikke sant? Ja. Og han har også vært leder for Musikernes fellesorganisasjon i Trøndelag. Rian har hovedfag i musikk fra Universitetet i Trondheim og kulturadministrasjon fra Høgskolen Telemark, og var leder for kulturskoleutvalget som leverte rapport i 2010. Og dagens tema er et tema du kjenner godt, og du rakk så at du også rakk opp hånda i sted. Så du har også følt deg som en idiot på et tidspunkt i karrieren. Men jeg tenkte da, nå er jeg litt sånn usikker på om du hører meg, for nå ser vi ikke bildet. Du hører?
Jeg hører deg. Ja, det er bra. Hører du meg, så har vi jo opprettet kontakt her.
Ja, flott. Bare bildet som forsvinner faller litt ut iblant. Nei, tenkte jeg kunne spørre deg da om å komme med en litt sånn overordnet situasjonsbeskrivelse for kunstnere og frilansere i kunst- og kulturfeltet. Etter 2 år med pandemi og nedstenging.
Ja, hva skal man si? Ingen trodde jo at dette skulle ta 2 år. Jeg husker vi snakket om det i mars 2020, at dette var kanskje over til påske. Og det var ikke påske i år vi snakket om påske 2020. Så ingen kunne forestille seg at det skulle bli så alvorlig og så langvarig, og så mange nedstengninger. Det er klart at dette har vært en særdeles alvorlig krise for norsk kunst og kultur. Vi bruker å si at dette den mest alvorlige krisen siden 1945, og jeg tror ikke vi overdriver når vi sier det. Vi har fulgt denne krisen gjennom hele denne pandemien og bidratt med å sikre inntekter, blant annet med denne inntektssikringen for sine næringsdrivende frilansere. Men når vi skal se på effektene, så deler vi jo det som Mari sier her, at det de utøvende kunstnerne primært som har blitt truffet hardest. Det sier også disse rapportene som Kulturrådet har fått utarbeidet, den siste kom på nyåret nå. Utøvende kunstnere har den største nedgangen i inntekt. Mens noen av de andre kunstnergruppene som ikke så avhengige av å samle folk, som våre folk er, de har ikke blitt så hardt rammet. Billedkunstnere for eksempel har greid seg rimelig godt. Men så er det av de utøvende kunstnerne, så er det da igjen de unge som har blitt desidert hardest rammet, nyutdannet og nye i feltet. Og grunnen til det er jo mange, det er jo selvfølgelig at de ikke hadde noe inntektsgrunnlag å regne ut inntektskompensasjon for. Så når du ikke har noe grunnlag, så får du heller ikke noen penger. De har ikke kommet i gang med karrieren, skulle ha startet på karrieren nå, etablere relasjoner, komme seg ut på festival og turnéer og begynt sitt kunstneriske virke. Det har de ikke fått det. De har heller ikke noe vederlagsinntekter, ikke sant? Det inntektene andre musikere får ved at de blir spilt på TV og radio. En grei inntekt for mange. Der har de ikke kommet ennå. Og i tillegg så forsvant jo de brødjobbene som mange av dem hadde. For mange av dem tok jo deltidsjobber i serveringsbransjen, hotellbransjen. Den var jo også stengt ned. Så de ble rammet på alle mulige måter samtidig. Kom ekstremt dårlig ut, og mange av oss er jo bekymret for den generasjonen der i to årene med kunstnere som vi kanskje mister store deler av. Vi vet også at det er i den der populasjonen at det er flest som har meldt inn at de sterkt vurderer å gå ut av kulturbransjen og heller gjøre noe helt annet. Og det skjønner jeg egentlig ganske godt når starten på kunstnerlivet ble såpass bratt. Det er uansett ikke særlig enkelt å være kunstner. Det er mye jobb og lite inntekt, som du, Mari, sier. Og når du tillegg får en så elendig start på karrieren, så er det ikke rart at mange er på vei ut. Det er en annen bekymring som jeg også har, at hva vil dette gjøre med den sosiale rekrutteringen til kulturbransjen? Vi vet jo allerede nå at spesielt noen kunstnergrupper, så er det litt mye overvekt av, la oss kalle det, hvit middelklasse fra Fogner. Fordi at de har et sikkerhetsnett i bånd som gjør det kanskje noe enklere å gå inn på en kunstnerkarriere. Men nå, når vi ser at det er også ikke bare til vanlig økonomisk vanskelig å gå i gang med en kunstnerkarriere, men du kan også bli truffet av en sånn alvorlig nedstanding som det her, så vil jeg tro at det er flere der det økonomiske grunnlaget er litt lavt, som kanskje nå vegrer seg for å gå inn i kunstneryrkene. Da får vi en enda større skjevhet inn i kunstnerpopulasjonen, og det bekymrer meg. Fra runda der foreløpig, så kan vi jo snakke om veien videre, eventuelle forbedringer som vi jobber med, sammen med Stortinget og regjering etter hvert. Det er vel du som styrer, er det ikke det, Ine?
Ja, det skal vi nå komme tilbake til. One of the things that Hans Ole is pointing to is that there is a flight, particularly among young people, that almost give up before they start because they don't have anything to fall back on and haven't really earned like social rights or any kind of vederlag. What's that in English? Like copyright income, yeah. Right? Yeah. So I'll introduce you properly because we're very lucky to have, like I said, someone from outside of Norway. Sandro Tajuri is a German composer working mainly in the performing arts field. He was, though, educated as an actor and has worked at the Theater Basel for several years before he started to work as a freelancer, working in cities like Basel, Zurich, and Munich. In 2015, he established a theater company, Theater Farm, together with his colleagues. A company that's funded actually through collaborations with state theaters as well as applying for public grants. And with a strong background in music, you started composing music, or you had been composing throughout your career, but now you've kind of moved over into composing more or on a full-time composing scores. So maybe you could fill us in a bit about the situation in Germany during the pandemic for freelancers in particular. Do you have this similar post-pandemic flight from the field?
Well, I guess yes, because the main problem we were just talking about before is that that you're kind of in a constant loop, so that the theaters you're working with where you could actually work as a freelancer or make productions has been shut down, of course, because of the pandemics. No audiences were allowed, and lots of places are going down right now. So. And there are some places that are not opening up again. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, for at least a few theater groups I know, it's kind of hard to get back into that game to find places where to produce. It is possible to write grants or to apply for grants and to get the grant and to produce, but the hardest thing is to find a place where you can actually do this. And I got lucky with my group, with my theater group, because we, the works we've done so far were all collaborations with state theaters. So it was partly funded by the theater and partly funded by the grants we applied for. Yeah, so far, this is what I can say about my experience, at least for the last 2 years with my theater group. The other thing is that I'm not only working in this theater group, I also have my other theater family, and we're only working in state theaters. And we got lucky because we were in a kind of like the sinus curve, that every time when there was a lockdown, we started producing, and there was a lockdown, and then the numbers went down. So they opened up the house again. We could play a performance, at least have a premiere. Two performances, and then it got back down again. And so we were kind of in that, you know, roller coaster up and down, which was also very, very exhausting. But finally, we got lucky because we kept on working. Mm. That was good. They didn't shut down the whole work in general in the theaters in Germany, which was a good thing.
Mm. So what you're describing now is actually a possible kind of reduction, like crimping of the field in a way, shrinking of the field. Do you see that as a long-term constant? Do you think people will come back and start new things?
Or? Well, I know that there is a lot of applications for grants right now. Actually, my group, we're applying for another grant right now. And I know that there is like tons of people who are trying to get a grant. And of course, also the groups that hasn't been established so well so far. Mm. And actually, this is kind of hard to get, as I said before, to get kind of back in the game. Mm. To because what I experienced is that when the pandemic started, people were for a while desperately looking to go back to a theater to see a performance, but then the pandemic and all the situations, not just in the cultural field, but also in all other different businesses you had around, people who had their own businesses who were running down, were kind of like been dragged into a solitude, and to get them back out of this, to come back to theater, this is kind of hard, at least for the free scene, for the freelance scene. In the theater, we've done a production in a theater. I'm playing a show live on stage, and there you have this, you know, the usual suspects that would go to that theater, and they were like kind of desperate to see shows again, and then they came back again, and the five shows I've played so far, they were full. Mm-hmm. So that was good. But all the small theaters and all the places, the Gastspielorte, you know, where you would hire a room to make a performance, it's very hard to get the people back in there.
The programming venues. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, the programming venues. Yeah, thank you.
So, I don't know if maybe Hans Ole is the right person that I could address this question to. Is you talked about kind of what you're doing in terms of policy work, right? And the contact with politicians. And of course, we've had a shift of government in Norway. And I'm just wondering what the kind of climate is. Is there a political willingness to invest what's needed to kind of bring people back? And that's also something that maybe we can talk about more long-term consequences and maybe the political situation in Germany. But Hans Ole, because there have been incentives going on, there have been support schemes, and I don't think we should go and then discuss necessarily how good they have been, because now we're kind of moving on. But, you know, what is the kind of political climate at the moment?
Jeg tar det på norsk, for det liksom norsk vokabular her, og så handler det om liksom den norske settingen. Men det skjer ganske mye, både på kort sikt og på litt lengre sikt. Altså, det blir jo bevilget ekstra millioner til feltet via Kulturrådet, via Fond for utøvende kunstnere, og via Fond for lyd og bilde, og en del andre ordninger som også treffer mer eller mindre bra. Det må vi si. Alt det er jo ikke sånn som vi ideelt skulle ha hatt det. Det må vi erkjenne, men vi har en regjering med oss, vi har også Stortinget med oss på en del. Hvis vi skal se litt på det mer langsiktige, så er det jo en veldig viktig ting som denne pandemien har vist oss, og det er at det å være frilanser og selvstendig næringsdrivende med en sånn pandemi, det går bare ikke. Altså, vi kan ikke ha det normale systemet i årene fremover. En ting er pandemien, men så er det også andre ting som kan skje. Svangerskap, sykdom, uforutsette økonomiske svingninger og sånt. Så at dette er bare, den situasjonen her er bare noe som vi visste fra før, men det har blitt satt på spissen. Og så kom den her inntektssikringen for selvstendig næringsdrivende. Det var noe som vi ba om 11. mars, og så var det flertall for den 16. mars 2020. Så jeg tror aldri har vært vedtatt noen lov så fort i Norge noen gang. Det er vi veldig glad for. Men det var jo fordi at Stortinget så at det var helt, helt nødvendig å gjøre noe med den gruppen. Og det står også noe om det i Hurdalsplattformen, altså regjeringens tiltredelsesplattform. Det står at de skal utrede og forbedre sosiale ordninger for selvstendig næringsdrivende. Det har også Venstre fremmet på Stortinget. Det vet jeg at Sosialistisk Venstreparti også ser på. Og en del av de andre partiene som ikke sitter i regjering. Så på lang sikt så jobber vi for en eller annen ordning som ligner på den inntektssikringen vi har hatt i de to årene her, men som selvfølgelig må utredes mye bedre enn vi greide på en helg i 2020, sånn at den treffer bedre og har mer tilpasset detaljer som vil virke bedre enn den ordningen vi har nå. Så det er skjedd et skifte i holdning til det å være selvstendig næringsdrivende og freelancer. For den holdningen vi hadde før 2020 var at du selv har valgt å bli næringsdrivende, da får du selv ta konsekvensene av det. Det var det vi hørte, spesielt fra sittende regjering, men også fra sterke stemmer på venstre sida. Den holdningen der, den har skiftet nå. Så det er et momentum nå som vi selvfølgelig skal benytte oss av og bli med på de utredningene som regjeringen skal gjøre. Og jeg er 99% sikker på at vi får en utredning av det her i vår. Og jeg er også sikker på at vi får et flertall for at det skal gjøres noe med rettighetene til selvstendig næringsdrivende og frilansere. Så vi er på vei.
Ja, fordi det du snakker om er jo egentlig det at risikoen i store deler av kulturbransjen er skjøvet opp over på individet, ikke sant? Og det jo litt det du også snakker om, Mari. Men jeg tenkte jeg skulle liksom høre med deg hva du tenker liksom konsekvensen av at det så mange I den situasjonen. For du har jobbet en stund. Det handler jo ikke bare om de unge, det handler jo også om folk som etablerte. Og du snakket nå om at det mange som på en måte, gått, altså, kommet opp I 40-årene som slutter da. Hva tenker du liksom konsekvensene for kulturfeltet når vi mister folk som deg?
Ja, nei, det jo ikke noe særlig å miste de unge, det helt klart. Og så det for vi, oss som har holdt på en stund, så det et drøm at du har jo jobbet opp en viss erfaring og endelig begynt å forstått noen ting, kanskje. og takle liksom systemet, får tilslag på søknader, man liksom sånn, det skulle egentlig ha herifra, skulle kanskje ha gått greit med en del av oss. Og så tenker jeg at hvis, ja, det også det at vi ofte har en slags veiledende funksjon nå, for mange som kommer etter oss, som vi jobber med, jeg jobber masse med unge scenekunstnere og hjelper masse til med forståelse av budsjett og søknadsskriving og alskens. Så jeg tror jo det er et eller annet med at hvis man mister de som har jobbet år for år og gjort seg de erfaringene vi har gjort da, så ramler det ut mye kunnskap. Jeg sitter jo at det ikke kommer fra de andre også, men jeg har jo lært av noen jeg også. Mm. Så etter en ting å miste de unge, men så mister du de som har blitt sliten da.
Ja. Ja, jeg ser at det en kommentar fra Hans Ole her, tror jeg.
Ja, det tiltrer helt Maris I den betraktningen der, og dette jo ikke helt nytt, og så vi vet jo det at mange når en slags erkjennelse, når de nærmer seg 35-40, kan vi fortsette det livet her med til dels veldig mye jobb, og til dels veldig liten inntekt, og kanskje har lyst til å etablere seg med hus og kone og barn og stasjonsmann og sjefer og alt det som hører med. Og I tillegg da, så vet vi jo det at de fleste av de folkene her, de har jo ikke noe særlig tjenestepensjon. De har folketrygden, og that's it. Men så vet vi jo også at folketrygden, den blir dårligere ettersom årene går. Det innretningen I dagens folketrygd, for du må jobbe lengre for å kunne få det samme som du ville ha fått før. Og vi vet at mange også blir veldig slitne på slutten av en kunstnerkarriere, så de... I tillegg til å ha dårlig inntjening I yrkeslivet, så har de også en elendig pensjon når de blir såpass gamle at de kan gå med pensjon. Så det noen sånne økonomiske betraktninger de enkelte må se på her, og jeg skjønner godt at noen da tenker at dette her det har jeg ikke råd til, hverken nå eller I fremtiden. Altså, I den fremtidige ordningen som vi skal ha på plass, må vi også se på det som har med trygdesystemet og ikke minst med pensjonssystemet å gjøre. Vi må ha en eller annen mekanisme som gjør at disse selvstendige næringsdrivende og frilansere med lav inntekt får en eller annen slags tilleggspensjon, så at de ikke havner langt under fattigdomsgrensa når de skal gå av, når de blir da 72, som dagens aldersgrense. Jeg ikke så sikker på om alle utøvende kunstnere, spesielt kanskje ikke dansere, står på en scene når de 72 år. Jeg tror det kan bli litt krevende, både for den enkelte og for kompanier, og kanskje også for staten, når disse her ellers vil havne på NAV I stedet for å gå på normal pensjonsordning. Takk.
To follow that up, I would like to ask you who are freelancers or almost what would make a difference for you to stay in the field? I mean, what kind of things would help you? I mean, you are working with institutions, for example. Would this type of kind of intäktssäkring or that or underskottsgaranti would that be a help with what could have made a difference for you and what do you think is making it possible for you to keep on going
I see it as kind of two it's the pandemic period That's kind of a separate situation to the like the everyday situation. So in the pandemic, we had problems. We had huge problems, and me and a lot of other people had to, because we're responsible producers. It's my company signing actors and technicians, and I'm buying in equipment, etc., etc. And suddenly, when the, for example, you sell a performance to Den Kulturelle Barnehagesekken, which we did, we produced for them, and then the day before the premiere, they postpone it with a year. So I'm the responsible employer in this situation, and there's 6 or 7 people who've been working for months for this production, and so I had to take a loan, like a forbrukslån, to pay them, which I'm going to pay for a while. So, and I know a lot of people in the same situation, because we were so encouraged to keep on working, keep on producing, and we did, and it did not pay off for me, at least. Mm. So, but I, you know, that's not how it usually works. Now the problem is like looking at the structure, which has always been a problem. It just became so clear in the pandemic time. So I'm, when I work in certain productions, like with Ibrahim, at Rosendal, with Alex, it's one situation. It's properly funded. We're not paying rent, we're not paying technical equipment. There's lots of advantages, making it a production that everyone can be paid. It's producing outside of co-productions is very, very, very difficult. And so for like the field, like for me, I think the only solution is either to get more, like a more active way to co-produce, if that's an interest, like more co-productions maybe, or I don't know, or bigger, more funding. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
What do you think?
I would go for the same, that that co-productions or collaborations would be the, or at least it would help, or it helps a lot, and it's not just about the money. It's also about the exchange of experiences and the exchange of different art forms. And my aim is to kind of go out, just not to work in the German system with all that, to try to collaborate with different European countries, because I guess when you would kind of enter that world, and when you meet people from other countries, from other European countries who are in the same situation, and both of them are trying to apply for grants and all that, it could help to widen the group, you know, to make it kind of bigger, and to overcome these kind of boundaries in a way that, at least in my mind, is a solution, or is a way to go to, actually.
Mm. Spreading the risk in a way.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah,
because, you know, I have lots of friends, and this always had been like this. This is not about the pandemic, as you said. It was before like that. I have friends who've been working freelance since I know them. And I was trained as an actor, and I worked in theater, in state theaters, so I didn't have to think about all that stuff. Now it's different, of course. But I have friends who's been working in the freelance, and some of them were very well established, and it just, you know, it worked. And some of them had to partly work in a cafe and then go back to some ensemble where they can actually make a production. a freelance production, then they have to go back to work in the cafe again. So it's you have this how would you say
wide spectrum?
Yeah, wide spectrum exactly of yeah. Of existences in that field. Mm. So.
But yeah. Does it have to do? I mean, this is for all of you, actually. I mean, there is a lot of culture being produced, and the institutions are very dependent on freelancers, and that kind of goes for the whole society. So, I mean, in health work, you have people who are working part time, for example. At building sites, you have people that were. And this is actually something that I came to think about, particularly because you sent me some documents, Hans Ole. I mean, in building sites, you have people who are forced into doing, making their own companies. And that's kind of the reality in the performing arts as well. You have to organize as an independent contractor in a way. But are we, you know, too willing to say yes to like working, and have we kind of in the field gotten so used to like producing all the time that and all the audience have expectations of all these choices? I mean, is it how can we kind of get back to a more normal situation? Hans Ole, your hand is up.
Ja, vi kan si litt om dette med det med å være oppdragstaker og arbeidstaker. Og det her må vi ha flere tanker I hodet på en gang. For det sånn at noen vil alltid måtte eller ville være selvstendig næringsdrivende og ganske naturlig måte å være tilknyttet arbeidslivet på for en god del, også kunstnere. Kan jeg ikke se for meg at Frida Ånvik og Jan Eggum skal være ansatt noe sted når de drar på turné. Det tror jeg ikke ingen som ønsker. Men det vi har sett spesielt de siste 20 årene at veldig mange kunstnere, kulturarbeidere de opplever at de ikke får arbeidsoppdraget uten å må ta det I egen næring. Og I mange av de situasjonene her så det egentlig snakk om noe som uekte, det påtvunget. Og hvis man da krever å være lønnsmottaker ansettes I stedet, så risikerer man selvfølgelig at oppdraget den går til noe annet og vet aldri hva nedsida med å være selvstendig næringsdrivende. Så det vi har jobbet for I noen år, spesielt mot venstresiden, som vi anser større sannsynlighet for å få gjennomslag for det, å stramme inn arbeidsgiverbegrepet, arbeidsgiveransvaret I arbeidsmiljøloven, sånn at det den som bestemmer hvordan arbeidet skal utføres, de har rettigheter og plikter som arbeidsgiver, og da må vi endre noen bestemmelser I arbeidsmiljøloven. Og da kan du enten være fast ansatt, det tror jeg ikke så veldig, veldig relevant for så mange av oss, men det en åpning for midlertidig ansettelse for kunstnere I arbeidsmiljøloven, sånn som den ligger I dag. Og det typisk de som drar på turné med kulturell skolesekken, de som engasjert ved privatteatrene, ikke sant, som I Folketeatret, Chateau Neuf, NRK, andre medier, der du har typisk et band som sitter og gjør en jobb over en lengre eller kortere tidsperiode. Vi mener at de skal være arbeidstakere I stedet for oppdragstakere, og vi mener at det til stor fordel for den enkelte, men også en stor fordel for samfunnet som helhet, da du får folk over I en mer sikker måte å være tilknyttet arbeidsgiver, og har sikrere rettigheter når du blir syk, når du får barn, når du skal ha trygg, når du skal ha pensjon. Så det noe som vi jobber for nå, og det ligger også inne I regjeringsplattformen. Det har regjeringen faktisk lovet å gjøre noe med, de egentlig allerede I gang med den jobben. Men husk på, vi må ha flere tanker I hodet på en gang. Noen vil vi ha over på arbeidsoppdrag som arbeidstaker, noen skal fremdeles være sitt inn I næringsdrivende, og dem må vi også sikre bedre rammebetingelser for, sånn som vi har fått inn en bestemmelse I regjeringsplattformen på, som vi skal jobbe med. Takk.
Mm. So, Mari and Sandro, you just started leading a cultural institution and you collaborate with large scale institutions. What's the institution's responsibility, do you think, towards the freelancers that they employ? And what will be your kind of, what will you take care of when you work with freelancers? Do you have any, you know, when you're on the other side of the table? Will you be able to, you know, think about these things?
Well, the thing is, you know, I've been on that side of the table a few times as well. So I'm fully aware that the limitations of the arenas. But I think at least a collaboration, like being able to sit down and collaborate on applications together with artists, so that, you know, like for my, I've had some experience with that before, and that's been very helpful. That, you know, we meet with the group who's coming, and then we'll do an application together. And there are certain ways to get like gjestopolstøtte, for example, which is a very good way to finance just the production side, which both can gain the artist and the arena to, you know, to look for those opportunities, and to make, at least because I always work in, not like I've never worked in a theater institution per se, so just to make colleagues aware the cost, because most people don't understand the cost of producing scenic arts. They are, you know, it's very expensive. And yes, exactly. So most arenas are run by people not from this business, and they have very different expectations of and kind of think that a production can be made in a week, for example. So they don't understand like paying the people for such a long time, and all the, you know, different people that are involved. So it's also like kind of making people aware that this is what it costs. So we have to kind of try to solve this situation together.
Mm. What's
yeah, your awareness yeah. is a very good word for that. Awareness of what it means to produce by yourself, what it means to hire people, what can you make a living off? And I guess it's more of I'm always kind of, I don't know, a little disappointed by the German government when it comes to the funding of arts in general, because the money that is spent into that fund is very, very little, and but the need is so big, and there are so many people working in that field, and that is kind of like, you know, the scale is not right. And I guess what helps, and you just said it before, is awareness, is to spread the word, is to talk about these things, and to really point out what it means to make a production. And I guess that's it, yeah.
But are we selling us maybe sometimes short, maybe? And you know, are we good enough at negotiating? And Hans Ole, I mean, what are the... Is it actually possible for artists to or cultural workers to go on strike, for example? Or would that just mean that it's okay, then it's just on to the next young person? I mean, what are our options? I see you nodding. Hva tror du? Altså, hva er de liksom politiske, liksom, hva er mulighetsrommet da, for kunstfeltet og kunstnere og frilansere?
Jeg driver jo en fagforening, en klassisk fagforening i LO-familien, og da er det noe som heter forhandlingsstyrke. Det er klart at vi i Creo er ikke den gruppa som har størst forhandlingsstyrke. Vi kan ikke ramme kritiske samfunnsfunksjoner. Vi kan ikke stenge ned oljeproduksjonen på Nordsjøen. Vi kan ikke stenge heisene. Altså, heismontørenes forening, de har forhandlingsstyrke. Hva skjer hvis vi stenger alle scenene i Norge? Ikke så mye. Folk blir leise. Folk blir skuffet. Men vi rammer ikke samfunnet. Vi stenger ikke ned samfunnet på grunn av det. Så vi har ikke den samme forordningsstyrken. Vi må kjempe på andre områder. Vi må kjempe blant annet med å være solidariske med hverandre. Ikke underby hverandre når vi tar oppdrag. Det er et kjempeproblem at noen tar spilloppdrag, sceneoppdrag, lavere enn det som burde vært normen. Så der må vi jobbe, og vi har jo, det er sikkert ikke helt innenfor i konkurranselovgivningen, men vi har en del anbefalte satser som vi har innført på en del områder. Det har vært krevende. Noen synes de er for høye, noen synes de er for lave, men vi har prøvd å regne ut på et visst balansepunkt. Det begynner å virke. Folk henviser til dem. De legges til grunn i søknadsbehandling rundt omkring i fond. Festivaler, i hvert fall de som er noenlunde seriøse, legger dem til grunn som en slags minstesats. Men det er en evig kamp. Vi kan aldri gi oss på det. Det kommer stadig nye kunstnere inn i feltet. De nyutdannede, de må læres opp. De må læres opp mens de er student, sånn at de ikke tar spillejobber, artistjobber, scenejobber, mens de er student, under det som er profesjonelt honorar / lønn. Og det er også en evigvarende jobb som vi hele tiden må jobbe med, og det vi gjør sammen. Vi må lære opp oss selv at vi skal ta rimelig og fornuftig betalt. Og det kan jo ikke stole på at andre gjør for oss. Vi kan ikke gå til regjeringen og si at dere må sørge for at vi tar fornuftig honorar. Det må vi gjøre selv. Det er jo derfor folk samler seg i interesseorganisasjoner og fagforeninger også, for å ta kampen sammen og være solidarisk. Men så er det et annet aspekt her. Dess flere vi får inn på arbeidsgiverforhold, altså at du får lønn, dess flere får vi over på tariffavtaler. Og når vi har en tariffavtale, så har du andre mekanismer for å kunne sette makt på kravene, fremforhandle kollektivt, og kanskje også stå sterkere sammen. Så det er jo ikke uten grunn at det er i de kunstnersjangerene der folk har fast arbeid, fast lønn, 100% ansettelse, at lønna, inntekten er høyest. Det er jo ikke til å legge skjul på at det er i orkestersektoren med 100% ansatte musikere at lønnsnivået er høyest. For de har vært fast ansatt siden før krigen en gang. Og de har kjempet kampene solidarisk hele tiden. Det har ikke vært lett der heller. Det vet vi som har drevet og forhandlet på vegne av dem. Men tross alt, der har vi lyktes med å holde et lønnsnivå som ikke er fryktelig høyt, men i hvert fall ganske mye høyere enn de fleste andre kunstnergrupper har hatt. Så fast ansattelse, eller også til nød midlertidig ansattelse, er et pressmiddel i å heve inntektssida for kunstnerne. Takk.
Yeah, do we talk enough about what we earn or what we expect to earn? Should we, like, I mean, I think in a way we often talk about funding and money in the field. It's a big discussion, and often you end up talking about that in any discussion in a way. But at the same time, we don't necessarily share, we're not so forthcoming necessarily on our own negotiations or our own fees. I mean, or do you talk about that with people ever? Like, is that a conversation?
I do that.
You do that, yeah.
Yes. Because I think this is very important. It's not about, because I want to, at least this is my personal feeling to this. I'm trying to avoid this kind of weird competition of being to envy someone who might earn more than I do, and we never talk about this. But I don't know what he earns or she earns, and you know. And this is like this that shit drives you crazy. And so I'm very open about this because I think, and I'm in Germany. I'm in a range where I would say this is what you at least need for a living. Just very basic. And I guess everyone should get that. So I'm very open about what I earn in Germany. And I guess this could be very good. There are some models, for instance, colleagues of mine who are the theater chefs right now in Basel, in the Theater Basel, where I used to work. They have this how would you call this? It's like you get paid by not only by age, but also by the time you were working as a professional. So there is like a
tier in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that is the first step in the German theater system. That is that's really a step forward. This is I guess this brings us somewhere, at least. Because then you don't have to necessarily avoid these conversations like, now I'm not talking about my wages. Mm. You know, it's more open, gets more to the point.
Mm. How is that in Norway, do you feel? Is it the same or...?
Well, I'm usually the producer, so I see what everyone's
writing. Yeah.
Sometimes I decide. Yeah. Yeah. No, I experience it as quite open because I don't know. Is it because they know I know approximately? I know it's such a, and especially here, it's so small. I mean, everyone knows everything, I think.
I think maybe we could also open up, if you have any comments or questions in the audience, please feel free to join us. Yeah, there's already a question.
I'm sorry, I have to do this in English.
That's fine. Do we by any chance have that microphone that was here before? So,
it's okay.
But then he can hear you, so that would be good. I think it's on its way, if that's okay. Thanks.
Hi, I have to do it in English, I'm sorry. So what is important to add is that in German system, we don't have these letters that you have here, not for the freelance and not for the one who are hired in state theater. Mm. So everyone, also the actors in an ensemble in Berlin that you might have seen, have to negotiate for themselves every time they are discussing a contract. So the actors who are in the Volksbühne, for example, they have a 2 years contract and they have to go after 2 years and negotiate again.
Mm.
And when we are working somewhere, we have to negotiate every piece that we are going to do again. Mm. So by ourselves. And we are not allowed by law to discuss it with other colleagues. And now we summed up and we have meetings because...
So I'm doing illegal stuff, basically.
Oh. Absolutely. But this is what we do now.
This
but
is
we,
my way of undermining the system.
Yeah, we are calling each other, like from colleague to colleague. I'm a director, so when I have a colleague goes to a theater that she or he knows I was in, he or she would call me. Mm. And I would say what I earned last time.
Mm.
And it's not with age and not with... not with experience, it's just if you are this week on woke or not.
Mm.
And I'm afraid to say if you're a woman or not.
No.
Okay, that's a thing.
Mm.
So we are just starting this. And I think this is so good. And I guess that you said it, if you meet and team up, that's always good. Also as freelance, we just started to have freelance groups that are talking to each other about these things. So, you see, this is something that you have ahead of us in Germany, for example.
Mm.
What are the consequences if you break that code of silence? What are the consequences?
It depends on who you are. If you are... This is changing now. So, this is an old law, and it came out that it's illegal to do it because, we built up, actually, it was the actors who did it because us directors, we were too snobbish to do that. The actors went and did it also for us. Thanks. So they teamed up and asked lawyers if this can be still, because it's old law, right? And they discuss it if this can be, if this is democratic. And now they are changing it. And when you are talking to someone, the consequences when you are young and you are freelance and somebody knows it, you might get a nasty phone call. But when you are established, like we are working longer, we don't give a fuck because there can't be consequences. Because when you go to, nobody can take you to jail for this. Mm. So no judge will do it. So it was just a system of kind of be thankful that you can work in a system and shut up.
Mm.
That was that.
Thank you for that. It's interesting to, and it's
bullshit.
Sounds very... I think we have a comment from Hans Ole.
Yes, there is a saying among us unionists. It goes like this. Alone you beg, together you bargain.
Yeah, alone you beg, together you bargain. Yeah.
Men så er det dette med kollektive forhandlinger for selvstendig næringsdrivende. Noen får oversette, for dette finnes, jeg ikke sikker på de engelske uttrykkene her, men det finnes et EU-direktiv som sier at det skal være mulig også for selvstendig næringsdrivende å forhandle kollektivt mot en oppdragsgiver. Det er et direktiv som ikke er implementert i norsk rett enda i EØS-avtalen, men det er selvfølgelig implementert i alle EU-land. Så det skal ikke være ulovlig gitt noen forutsetninger å forhandle for eksempel ved et teater eller en CD i Europa hvis du er selvstendig næringsdrivende og går sammen i en fagforening og gjøre det. Så det skjer ting også der. Takk.
So I'm just going to translate that because, and then I'll give you the word. So what he said is that by EU law, it's independently organized workers, selvstendig næringsliv, like what do you call that in English?
Entrepreneurs.
Yeah, are allowed to negotiate collectively. So it's actually then you could complain to the EU if that's the case. Yeah. So Mari.
Yeah. Just because. So in this case, we're kind of discussing the institutions hiring freelancers and entrepreneurs. And that's one thing, but most of us work with as our own kind of like producing, like Ibrahim here now producing in collaboration with several institutions, but still it's his company, he's the employer, so or some of, I run a company, so the if I go to Ibrahim with everyone working with him now and say we want more money, that would just bring that production to a halt and would stop. And most of us are in that kind of situation. We're working for an equally small company, so which simply doesn't have the financial muscle to handle our demands, maybe. I'm getting money from Abraham, don't worry. But it's a different thing when you're negotiating with an institution and when you're negotiating with a small company making one production per year and, the financial flow is...
Yeah, and then it's also it's project money, so it's actually set. You don't have any leeway. So you applied for funding, and then if there are unexpected costs, then what do you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It comes out of your own pocket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is that the replique? And then I see Alexander's hand. Can you wait? Yeah. Okay.
It's very short. Something that's been occurring to me as I listen is one thing is about getting a fair pay for the work you do, but it's also, there's another issue, which is that certain work isn't recognised as work. Mm-hmm. And so it seems that it's possible to do it properly in Norway. You can do it well in production. The question is, what about the work that's outside of the production? And how do you establish platforms that can seek financing for that work? And I think there are, in other countries, models out there, like in Belgium, for example, you can have platforms that are there. They're called like research and support platforms. And in reality, what they are is production agencies. They are there to be where you get a collective of producers working with different artists to support them pre-production. Because once your production is floated, if it's been budgeted properly, then it will do the work it's supposed to do. But what about the work before mm-hmm. the production and the work after the production? Yeah. So one thing is about fair pay, but the other is maybe that there's some gaps in the funding system recognizing certain aspects of work, which we now need to maybe start to name more precisely, start talking about and lobby to get some of these platforms floated.
Yeah, watch out for a report that's being published by the Arts Council this spring, which addresses that exactly. It's Ibrahim, and then it's Christopher.
I just want to point out that to be in a position where you can negotiate your salary is already... Like, there is, of course, in our budgets as well, it's some room to, of course, negotiate some things, but this room is very narrow and very claustrophobic financial room. But I just want to just share my tactics of applying for funding for a production. So the main source of funding is the Arts Council, and they stopped cutting what you apply for. But they will cut if they don't see a diverse plan of your the sources of your finances. So if they see like, okay, there's five places that he can still apply to that he hasn't applied to, then we can prioritize some other artists and cut some amount part of the thing that he applies for, and then prioritize some other artists. But these other sources, they always grant less than you apply for. Mm-hmm. They cut like radical cuts mm-hmm. in what you apply for. So my tactic now, when I put a application budget, is the Arts Council, of course, the biggest, and then all of the other small ones, I just blow them out of proportions. I kind of triple them. And then these budgets, they look silly, they look crazy. But this is how you have to do it. And then usually I also put like in the Excel sheet on the side, expected grant. Applied 150,000 krona, expected 25,000 granted.
Hmm.
So for the Arts Council, of course. But and then I remove the expected 25,000 when I apply to this and this. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes if you expect 25,000, you can get nothing. So it's, and then in the end, you see how much money you have, and then you start to make the real budget.
Mm.
Yeah.
In Germany, it's the other way around. It's, there is this magic number that's 30,000 euros. When you're around that, you're pretty much in the game. Yeah.
So, Christopher.
Hello. This kind of like a greenhouse for producer that Alex were describing actually also occurs in Denmark. In Aarhus, there's a place that is run by a woman. Her name is Charlotte Moss. And I went to a course with her at one point, and then right after, I managed to fund 250,000 Danish kroner for a project. So these kind of like greenhouses of producers can really help to how to understand the game or the expected end goals of kind of like doing this kind of applications. But I just want to say something is that you asked the question, Nina, about what would happen if you take the producers out of the field? What I can imagine is that all that time it takes to create this patchwork of application and make all the arrangement and make all the Excel arcs and all of that takes an enormous amount of time. And if that goes over to the artists themselves, it would lower the artistic level of every production for sure, because it takes time, it takes energy, it takes focus to do great art. So if you take that away from that, it would only mean that there's the artistic level will go down. But I have a question to how to be a producer here in Norway. Is there kind of like when you make an application, is there kind of like what you say in Norway, is there føringer on the different application forms and stuff like that? That was a question from me. Yeah.
So there are there demands on what type of like for example, you have to target children, for example, is that what you're, or you have to write a project or do a project about sustainability or health or not really is the answer. But of course, there have been some specific schemes that have addressed these things. And they're often criticized politically by some parts of the political system in Norway. Or a political establishment. But actually, I did some research, a little bit of research on that topic when I was doing my PhD, and it's more common in other European countries to have these type of things that you have to check, a checklist in a way. So in Norway, it's not the case, but it might be in the future, Denmark, possibly.
There's a lot of that, and also a lot of private funds that you can apply for.
Yeah. Are we too dependent on maybe public funding in Norway? That's a question that maybe too. Yeah.
It's very.
Yeah.
It's very important to not be reliant on private funding,
yeah.
Because if you make provocative something.
Yeah.
And you get funded by, I don't know, Rema 1000, they're gonna sue you.
Mm.
And of course, you don't have any lawyers to defend yourself. And the union, they can't do that because the lawyer has like 2,000 artists that they have to take care of. So this is very important to keep it in the government, kind of in this place, I think, outside of capitalist systems.
Mm.
I have two comments. One comment is that it would be nice and save lots of time, actually, for artists who are applying for their own productions if the Cirkner schema, like the application forms, would be very similar to each other, because every institution has its own scheme and it just takes ages to transform it and the amount of words and this kind of stuff. So that would be something really nice for us who are applying and just taking all this in their free time. That's one thing. And also about what you said about this platform of working internationally, me as a German working now in Norway, it's really hard to kind of accept, but also to get work in Germany, because the rates here are, of course, very different, pretty high. And then if I accept work in Germany, I feel I can just do it in my vacations, because the rates are so low. Like now I'm invited to festivals and I had to negotiate and I said, well, you know, this is the limit and they can't even pay the very little limit that I set. So it's really, like, really hard for me to actually work internationally. I feel that's, like, what I can do for fun and not to have the living and the work here. Yeah.
There's one thing that I would like to bring up. It seems that we have some time, and that's the question of effectivization in a way. Hans Ole, we were communicating a little bit ahead, and you mentioned the so-called ABE, work and effectivity reform, that was launched by the previous government, which has also been called the cheese grate cut, ostehøvelkutting from institution and the whole, actually not only cultural field, but the whole, everything, I guess. And that has been to kind of effectivize institutions that get government funding, right? So, and it seems as this effectivity, this culture of effectivity is also something that is behind the freelance, kind of every going freelance, what can you say, freelancification, or what you could call it, and more and more precarious situation for workers in a way. So, I mean, do you see this changing? Is it still going to be all about effectivity in the future?
No, I don't think so. This ABE. ABE, avbyråkratiserings- og effektiviseringsreformen, som er mye større i smertsbyggeren med The Cultural Life. Det omfatter jo også helsevesenet, alle offentlige institusjoner, alle departement, alle etater, underliggende kulturrådet, utdanningsdirektoratet, og alle fikk jo disse hostehøvelkuttene, som du sa, det er det som blir benemt som. Og dette var jo noe som forrige regjering innførte som et av sine første tiltak, med argumentasjonen om at dette var for å kunne effektivisere offentlig sektor. Og det kan godt hende at det deler av offentlig sektor som behøvde en effektivisering, men måten de gjorde det på var jo bare å kutte jevnt over overalt, 0,5%, 0,7%. Så det var jo veldig lite målrettet, og det var en del av de største kritikkene mot den reformen der. En annen ting som vi kritiserte var jo at dette skulle jo i utgangspunktet være de offentlige institusjonene som skulle bli rammet av det, men de fleste kulturinstitusjonene er jo ikke offentlige institusjoner, de er offentlig finansierte institusjoner, de er stiftelser, er det AS-er, på utsiden av det offisielle myndighetsapparatet. De burde egentlig ikke vært med. Så har sittende regjering lovet å fjerne dette kuttet. Det ble ikke gjort nå i statsbudsjettet for 2022. Og forklaringen vi har fått på det er at det rett og slett ble for liten tid til å gjøre det teknisk. For det, da måtte det gjøres så mange endringer på så mange poster i så mange departement at regjeringen rett og slett ikke rakk å gjøre alle de nødvendige tekniske endringene for å fjerne ABD-reformen. Men det kommer helt sikkert på 2023-budsjettet, og da blir også rammevilkårene for de offentlige kunstinstitusjonene noe bedre. Det kan også få da, følger for alle de institusjonene som engasjerer frie kunstgrupper, og frie teatergrupper, frie scenekunstgrupper inn på sine institusjoner. Håper vi, men vi vet aldri. Politikk er ofte uforutsigbart, sånn som verden for øvrig er rundt oss. Takk.
Yeah, but it's interesting because, I mean, this has been the case in the media for like since the 90s when they started firing people. And at that time, they gave so-called golden parachutes to people who willingly quit, which they don't anymore, actually. I think it's interesting, this idea of producing as much content and culture and art, but just with freelancers instead. It's kind of this endemic, it's kind of this expectation that everyone should just like hustle and go on and just be ambitious. And I mean, is there something in our own kind of, have we accepted too easily this type of hustle culture, do you think, that we should just, you know, go on and make art and no matter what? What do you think about that? I mean, is it...
I think it's 100% hustling all the time when you're completely like freelance, because you're hustling towards the applications, the different institutions that might give you money, you're hustling with other companies trying to get some work there, you're hustling with Deco As, maybe you'll sell a performance for a half a year, you know. It's like an ongoing game, which is nice for a while. But all of this hustling is, as we've mentioned, unpaid. You have a limit to how long you can do it. And it's also like, it's maybe exciting at first. And yeah, maybe it is kind of nice for a while. And maybe we have been too willing to accept this kind of situation and, you know, pretending to be in some kind of a Hollywood movie, thinking that somewhere down the line there's going to be like a huge payoff, but that won't come in this field ever. I'm sorry.
Bleak.
Everyone. Yeah. The big payoff is quite it's not coming, I think.
Yeah, Alexander.
And this idea of the big payoff, what it means, I was just thinking about it from the other point of view of the society and the institutions, and it, one thing is about individuals and the suffering or the pain that can come from a field that's too heavily reliant on the hustle. But the other thing is, what do we lose, or who do we lose from the community, the art communities that we're a part of, if we are too heavily reliant upon the hustle, because it's the ones that can afford to hustle the longest that will still be here in the end. And the ones that can't afford it are the ones that either don't at all or at some point have no choice but to stop. And so the ones that really, not in every case, but in many cases, the ones that will last out are the ones that never needed the big payoff, actually. Not in all cases, of course. Some will hustle and need a big payoff and they will get it. But most that survive are the ones that never needed the big payoff in the first place, because somewhere else they got that payoff from.
Yeah, thank you for that. I went to this entrepreneur course and I was very provoked by the teacher because he kept on saying that, well, the best thing you can do if you want to be an independent worker is to marry someone wealthy. So, yeah, so it's a kind of along the same lines. I would like to, because we have only 10 minutes left, I would like to end on a more positive note. So I would like to talk a little bit about why are we freelancers? What's the benefit? Because there are benefits. For example, autonomy, right? So maybe we could do a little bit like of a round table and then at the same time, I'd like both for you to add if you would like, but especially for you three, and also maybe if you have any kind of last words or comments, what you think we need to focus on now, for example. For me, it's definitely, I mean, I'm still like small part freelancer, and I'm, for me, it's definitely the autonomy that I really appreciate. What about you?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. The same.
Yeah. What about you, Mari?
I also like to work in different places all the time with new people all the time. And I, you know, it's kind of a nightmare to be stuck in one place doing this, you know, meeting the same people. No one in particular, you know. But it's this... don't worry. It's this dynamic way of life where you're all the time in new collaborations, which is, I think, the nicest for me. That's why I've been doing it. Working and truly getting to know another person through this project is a beautiful thing. And I think that's as much part of it as everything else for me.
Mm. So Hans Ole, if you don't want to talk about yourself, then the benefits of freelancers, perhaps.
Yes, I was also self-employed once back in the old days. It was a free life. You could pursue your own artistic career, your own artistic life, your own projects. You can work with different persons on a different project. It was great fun, of course. And you can travel around in Norway, in Europe, doing the most fantastic things. And that's the benefits. And you are autonomous, of course. And you can rule your own every day in quite another way. If you are employed, you have to be at the same time, at the place at the same time. And you have to do, you are ruled by someone if you are employed. But if you are self-employed, yeah, you rule yourself.
Mm.
And that's the great difference between being employed and self-employed.
Mm.
But it's a tough life.
Mm.
It's not for amateurs.
Yeah. But perhaps, like, maybe connecting back to what you said, Alexander, it's also we actually do need a diversity of different situations and contexts. Anyone else? Or any last comments from, or questions from anyone else? Yes.
I just want to say that I'm sorry, I don't want to ruin to end this positive note, but I was just one thing on my mind. But the producer is a very clear, it's a very clear signal that the producers and the administrative part of the free arts field is not respected, because they cannot apply for the working stipend.
Mm.
Every other artist can apply, every other function in one company can apply for this stipend. It's a small amount of money you get paid every month from the Arts Council. But producer is not possible to apply for this. So this is. Can I ask one question?
Yes, of course.
To Mari. We could do it over a coffee, but maybe it's interesting for other people to hear. How can we keep you in the field? What would it take to keep you in the field? Because we're losing very valuable competence here.
1 million kronas. No.
As a craftsman and freelancer here who has worked with you as a producer, I can answer that question that was asked before. It's a disaster if we lose producers and people like you. Because, you and me, we're artists. We have no competence doing what Mari does. It's a mess if she disappears. Definitely.
Yeah, Mari.
No, I think I think it's just something structural, like maybe what Alexander was talking about, like finding solutions that can work so that you'll have a pool of producers working together and you can jump in and out of projects. I don't know. There's probably a solution somewhere structurally that can be made. We just have to find it. Maybe I know in Oslo there are more pools of producers working together. That has not been done here. Maybe there's things to learn. I mean, I'm sure there's always a solution somewhere, but it'll take some time and a lot of effort to just try different ways of making like this a way to make a living. And I totally agree with the point that the arts must not be a place only for people with privileged backgrounds. That's because we are. This is like a sign that we're going towards that. I didn't marry rich, unfortunately. there's nothing that, like, I'm totally 100% reliant on my income, and my daughter is as well. So there has to be, for people like me or people with less than me, and there are many, we need to have more stability, and then we can get a diverse and well-functioning art community.
Mm. Which is actually what, you know, the politicians want us to have. That is a political signal. So I think that's a kind of good summing up, or at least also a good ending point. I think also tonight there have been some also suggestions and strategies that we individually can take as well. Things to think about. So getting organized, for example, collectively bargaining instead of individually begging. I'm going to remember that quote. So thank you so much to Sandro, Mari and Hans Ole for joining us. And thank you to all of you. Next theater talk is going to be in May, probably, and it will probably be dealing with a representation. So actually, there's a good link. Go to see Parsifal. Have a good evening, and thanks for coming, all of you, and thanks for contributing. Thank you.